I think, well, what I provided to Legislative Council were copies, two copies of the proposed amendments presented by two of the interested groups, which were basically identical, and I asked Legislative Council to include them both and use whichever language seemed more appropriate. But I believe it was everyone's intention that it be limited to state and local correctional facility inmates, so adding that would...
So where, would you lead us through that exactly then, Ingrid, please?
Madam Chair, I believe it would be on page 2 of the dash 1 amendments, line 19, after the word inmate.
No.
I don't see any inmate in line 19.
The 20, I beg your pardon.
Okay.
After the word inmate of a state or a local correctional facility.
David?
Madam Chair, what I was suggesting was to insert inmate of a local, of a state or local correctional facility at the beginning of line 20 prior to the word is, rather than sticking it in later in the sentence. To make clear that they're an inmate at the time the screening test is taken. I think that's the intent, and I just want to be sure that nobody misunderstands the language once it's in statute.
Okay, well, I'm not clear what the language would be if you're doing that way.
I think it would then read, if a screening test of an inmate of a state or local correctional facility is positive for a substance of abuse, the inmate may be held.
Exactly.
Okay, Senator Hill moves that amendment.
Yes.
Thank you.
Are there objections to that amendment? Thank you. And so ordered. Okay, Senator Hamby moves dash 1 first. Senator Hamby moves the dash 1 as we've amended it to the bill. Are there objections? Yes. Hurry here. Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. Senator Hamby moves House Bill 2199 as we've amended it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Thank you. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman. Senator Benz.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, let's move. Senator Bond, you don't have your votes with you yet. Brockman's coming momentarily. Well, he's went home to take care of his sick wife. He's coming, basically.
Well, I'm not sure that I have my phone here yet.
Okay. Well, just give me the high sign when you're ready. I don't want to have them come and go. Okay. Let's see. House Bill 2660. This is the pet bill.
Oh, yes.
Pet theft bill. One of the numerous pet bills. Ingrid has amendments, I think, and then we have at least or probably one preliminary decision to make.
Madam Chair, I do not have amendments, but Representative Mannix did present to the committee dash A5 amendments when he testified at the public hearing, and those would basically just add persons licensed to practice veterinary medicine as those under the bill.
Okay. Okay, the chair would move the dash 5 amendments as starters. Are there objections to that addition? Hearing none, so ordered. As usual, I've asked Ingrid to review pretty carefully these bills with respect to felony and sort of enhancing of penalties, if you will, and she might want to just call our attention to it so we know what we're doing in this bill and either make an affirmative decision or see what we care to do about it. That's all. not necessarily recommending. I'm just saying it's here, and I want Ingrid to go over it with us. Okay, Ingrid.
Madam Chair, in addition to the other things the bill does...
Ms. Springer, we are hearing a little bit about the enhanced penalties for stealing your cat.
Okay.
Great. In addition to the other things it does cause the theft of a...
Do we make it a penalty if the parents solicit the stealing of an animal? I know a few parents who would like to...
Aiding and abetting.
Aiding and abetting. Yeah. It is aiding and abetting. Okay. Ingrid.
The bill defines companion animals as basically any dog or cat possessed for companionship and then other purposes like security, hunting, herding, and that sort of thing. And among the other things it does in terms of setting up the requirements for buying and selling these animals is to cause it to be a Class C felony to steal a pet. It does that by including companion animals in the items which, when stolen, raise the level of the offense regardless of the value of the property. So livestock animals are already included in Theft 1, and this would add companion animals to that category. In addition, it amends the provision states a value of a companion animal as of a minimum of $250, so that if an animal's actual value cannot be established, it is deemed to have at least a $250 value. And that was added, according to Representative Mannix's testimony, in order that the offense of theft by deception would be covered, because if the property is valueless, you cannot commit the offense of theft by deception. The other effect of that amendment would be giving it a $250 value would put it in the Class A misdemeanor theft category, but for this provision that automatically makes it Theft 1. So it does sort of both those things, but with the provision relating to adding it as the kind of property that elevates the offense in all cases to a Class C felony.
Madam Chair, could somebody help me with Section 3 of the bill?
That's what I'm looking at now. Yeah, I'm saying if you got a stealing of it, a Class C felony, and then you got an A misdemeanor for taking it.
But what I don't understand is, as it's written, if I go to the pet shop or go anywhere and buy an adult dog, and I decide I don't like that dog, and I want to go sell it back or sell it to somebody else, can I even do that legally under the bill? I mean, it's the crime of unlawfully obtaining if an animal dealer obtains from a person who didn't raise it. So you couldn't sell an adult animal or give an adult animal to a dealer if you didn't raise it yourself.
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, I believe that's correct.
So what do you do with them?
Now, animal dealers are defined to exclude a lot of groups of people.
Okay, but specifically, then a dealer could not buy an adult animal from someone who didn't raise it.
Okay, you have to look at the dealer definition, which is on page 1, sub 2, line 15. It goes on at some length. Who isn't a pet store? Dealer is not. I think this is basically the guts of the bill. They've picked out a few specific people and tried to define the right state law that picks them out. Should we call Representative Mannix? at some other point, you gotta go through this.
I guess I should have paid more attention to it earlier, but...
No, I think we may have heard it when you were not here on a Monday night, and that's why it's not your, I think you may have missed the sort of details.
Okay. Is, that's fine, I'm just voting no on the... I don't like the way we're approaching that, and I think we're creating confusion in the statute by doing so.
Well, I'm happy to entertain any suggestions for some modicum of things. I don't know. So there's where we are with that, Section 3. Senator Bond?
What do we have left as a dealer?
A dealer.
What's the target?
Do we have some, you want to come up, please, and briefly talk about the target? We need your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Anderson, and I'm here on behalf of the Humane Society of the Willamette Valley. I'm not the expert, but I can answer the question of what an animal dealer is. Animal dealers are people who broker adult animals for use in research facilities. We specifically excluded in this bill, I don't have a copy of it in front of me, places where Senator Bunn would ordinarily take an adult dog to dispose of it if he no longer wanted to have it as a part of his household. I'd be glad to attempt to answer any questions that you might have at this time.
So a dealer is a broker of sorts, or a temporary holder, or some.
The broker is not any person who sells the person's companion animal or offspring of the companion animal. By the person, it means the owner of the animal. If you sell your companion, you're not a broker, or you're not a dealer.
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, a person who's selling his or her own animal is not a broker. Is an animal that they raised or had for personal companionship is not an animal broker.
So I assume the goal of the bill is to prevent pets from being used in research.
No.
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, no, that's not correct. It is to prevent a rash, and this is a national problem, of either obtaining by deception or directly stealing a companion animal to sell for cash, which is an attractive commodity to a number of people, by whatever means possible to get the cash to an animal dealer. Now, most, when we've heard testimony that scientific research institutions do not want animals that are obtained in unlawful manners or in deceptive manner. There are enough viable avenues for them to be able to obtain their animals without having to traffic in human misery, so to speak.
Well, with Section 3 specifically, though, if a friend gave me an adult dog and later I wanted to get rid of that dog cat couldn't be sold to a dealer. Is that to prevent those animals from being used in research, or what other purpose is there to make it unlawful for me to take an animal that I legally own and transferring ownership to a dealer?
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, if you notice that in Section 3, Paragraph 1, Subsection A, there's an and at the end of the animal dealer, which means that is it Subsection B? Is that how you say it? That Subsection B means that it has to happen in conjunction together. These things need to be done together.
Okay. But isn't that saying if I have an animal that I want, if an animal dealer says you want to get rid of your adult dog that you didn't raise, okay, So I say, fine, you can have it. Isn't that both, they're a dealer, and I didn't raise it, so the and applies?
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, I don't think I've considered this question at all. I think you brought up a new question, and maybe other wisdom on the panel can address that.
Okay.
I have a few questions.
I'm done.
Thank you, Senator Schwerner.
Do we know what a retail pet store is? Is that defined somewhere? It's exempted from an animal dealer.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, I can't believe that.
It's on line 18 of page 1.
Well, we had we've had in the past legislation that sort of defined pet stores and regulate pet stores, so I think that that pet stores are regulated, and it would be interesting to see whether we mean a regulated pet store. Maybe we ought to send for Representative Mannix.
Madam Chair, I'd be much, much more comfortable if Representative Mannix were here to talk about this.
Instead of his pet bill.
That's right, it is, and we have interest in this, but... because we need it, we believe it needs to be done, but we are not legal experts.
While we're waiting, let me raise another, I guess this would be a suggestion.
Can we calm?
She's added. The crime of unlawfully obtaining a dog or cat seems to apply to any dog or cat, not just a companion animal. Yet I thought what we were trying to get at was obtaining a companion animal. And with the intent of selling it, if you're not a legitimate, and doing it legitimately. Yet, and this is line 25 of page 2, it would seem to apply to a much broader category. Specifically, it could apply, I was trying to think of where might this operate in unintended ways. And you have situations, I think, where family's kid raises a litter of pups, and maybe they'll put the pups out for sale with some friend of theirs, and maybe they'll have to get a little business going of selling puppies that are raised just locally. I don't think we're trying to reach that kind of situation with this, but yet, as I read this, I think it does.
Senator Hill's fixing
although there
that.
Is a puppy bill, I understand.
Yes.
Yes. Something less than a puppy mill.
Put it in there, stuff.
Yeah.
Senator Grinsky will take care of that. Don't worry about it.
So I guess I'm wondering whether we ought to, on line 25, abstain, change the reference to dog or cat to companion animal. Because that would not cover would only cover those dogs which are possessed for purposes of companionship, security, hunting, herding, or assistance. So that would essentially be dogs that have become pets. They have some have a relationship with them, which is what this is trying to get at.
Rebecca.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, you want to be careful, perhaps in excluding that you don't leave an avenue for animal brokers to obtain through unlawful means puppies that are for sale. That's something that it would be. I don't think that it would be wise to overlook the possibility of the theft by deception of puppies as well as full-grown companion animals.
I think they do not want this opened up that much.
Okay.
Interesting. Ingrid?
Madam Chair, I did not, just looking, find a definition of a retail pet store, but that doesn't mean there isn't one.
Okay. Let's go on. Mannix is on his way. I hate to go on too far because we'll get him the next. Okay, let's move on to House Bill 2137, which is the one Brenneman is here. Brenneman's waiting to have reported out of this committee.
If you want an 859.
Okay, well, Senator Bunn can do his 859.
Better or worse.
Senator Bunn.
Madam Chair, on Senate Bill 859, I have four sets of amendments. decided to try to give everybody something to choose from. The A11 through A14
I have discussed three of the four with the committee earlier. I'll briefly go through each. The A11 just takes the bill back to the status quo on which courts would deal with the driving under the influence. The original bill was concerned about, since the funds would go to the specific arresting agency, was concerned about cherry-picking the most valuable vehicle. So we said only the district and circuit courts would deal with it. Now the funds go to the sheriff, and so it's irrelevant which court. The A11 just leaves the status quo that all courts, the district, municipal, and justice courts, could all deal with these. The A12 are DMV amendments that allow them, through rule, to designate the sticker would go, for example, on the rear window rather than the plate. They feel that may be more workable because a zebra sticker may be on the plate in about half of those instances. The A13 is a 10-year window, so rather than taking something that may have happened 30 years ago and applying it, we're only dealing with convictions within a 10-year period. And the A14, our response to a concern that someone may be convicted, the vehicle forfeited, and then appeal and the conviction reversed upon appeal. And so the A14 would give a 30-day stay, and if an appeal was underway, then the process would be held until that appeal were decided.
Okay. As a query, on sub 5 of the 14 amendment, dash 14, if there is a stay, people, it's not going to be like I've been at a towing yard someplace. It just, you got the sticker on you. You just allowed the 30 days to
That's have correct. Your sticker. At no point does possession go to the sheriff's office until they take it for final possession and disposition. Part of the problem with most of the forfeiture bills is that you have the question of impoundment and the cost involved in it and the process. This just says once a conviction is certain, the vehicle is forfeited. And because of the necessity to deal with a possible appeal, the dash 14 recognize that and say nowhere through the process until that appeal is ended does the vehicle leave possession of the owner unless it's through some other provision, but not in this bill.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Shoemaker.
I had a problem with line 13 on page 2 of the bill about the theft exemption requiring the registered owner to prove to the satisfaction that the division of the vehicle was stolen and that the owner had filed a report of the theft. And I was concerned that about when that had to be done. And it had to be done at the time the owner was contacted about the car. I think they very probably will not have done it by then because it probably all happens within an hour or two after the car is taken. I talked to Senator Bunn about that, and he advised me that it was not intended to operate that way, but that the report of the theft would have to be filed prior to any conviction under the Act. And that does prove my comfort level with that. I think, though, that we ought to be specific about that and say on line 13, was stolen from the owner and prior to any conviction under Section 6.2 of this Act, the owner has filed a report of the theft. So I guess I'd like to ask that we like to move that amendment.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator
Bunn. I'd have no objection to that. I know of a number of times where the county sheriff's office has notified someone, for example, we'll stop, find a boat floating down the river, and we're usually the one that notifies the owner that their boat has been stolen. And it would not be anticipated that they would have to file a report before an arrest in order to protect themselves.
For conviction.
That's correct. It's a key, if they want the vehicle released, they have got to file the stolen vehicle report.
So you got to lay a fence up on. I mean, it's a tough dilemma for the parent, and I guess I'd like to hear anybody respond to that. I would imagine it would customary situation will be the wayward son who takes the family car and gets drunk again, takes it without permission, and then the parents are going to have to decide whether they want to file a theft report, which means that the kid may be prosecuted for theft as well as DUI. I've been pondering that in my mind, and I think maybe that's okay.
I understand the difficulty, but we're otherwise saying...
I understand.
Okay. If it was stolen, say it was stolen. If it wasn't, don't pretend that you didn't know it was going to be used.
Good. Okay. Are there objections to the amendments to line 13 offered by Senator Shoemaker?
Madam Chair, the committee may wish to make the same amendment on page 3, line 9, which permits the court to return stolen property.
Thank you, Ingrid. I would.
File report of the staff. Actually, it's on 10, isn't it?
Yes, thank you.
Put it in your place.
Yeah. Someplace wherever it goes there.
Right.
Okay, any other comments about Senator Bunn?
Madam Chair, do you want individual motion or?
Whatever you want to do, you're in charge. Yes, we, well, actually,
I don't think they were actually...
Okay. Are there any objections to those additional amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. Thanks.
Unless you want them individually, I'd move the dash 11 through 14 amendments.
There isn't a 12, and I'd ask you to name them.
No, I'm sorry. There is a 12.
Do you want the 12?
I didn't get them all, Madam Chair. I noted the 12, 13, and the
14. That's a quick ride.
What's the 11?
Well, a little extra amendment.
I'll start with 11.
Yes.
11, I would move the dash 11 amendments, which include the municipal and justice courts within the process. Again, they were only removed from the process because of a concern of an agency sending the most valuable vehicles for forfeiture to that agency, but that no longer applies since the county sheriff receives the funds.
Oh, I found the 12. Excuse me.
So where would, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, where, what part of the process would they be in?
Well, the entire, if you are convicted...
in any court, clear down to municipal level?
That's correct, because there are people who violate 813.010 are cited to both district and municipal courts. So it's the same crime, it's just distinguishing one court from the other.
Madam Chair, since I wasn't here at the last hearing on this, I don't know if this point, Dave Fidanke, ACLU of Oregon, if this point was made by Stevie Remington on our behalf, but we are concerned that municipal courts are not courts of record, and any action in a municipal court presumably would be appealable to district court, but that would just be another level of bureaucracy here. We would just assume these things started in district court if they were going to happen at all.
Justice court?
I don't think justice courts can deal with these, but if they can, we certainly don't want them there.
Yeah.
Okay. All.
I think Mr. Bellamy shakes his head yes that they can.
Well, Madam Chair, clarification. All we're doing is saying that upon a current conviction for these violations, wherever that conviction applies, the vehicle is gone.
Yeah, I think that all they're saying is you don't have a record on which to appeal it in some of those areas.
Well, but once you appeal it to the district court, so you start the process over again, your vehicle still isn't gone. You still have the same rights you've always had. And if we remove the municipal and district, excuse me, the municipal and justice courts, there is a $4 million fiscal impact on the state court system to deal with the additional load that would be created by shifting from the existing action that goes on.
But wouldn't that load still be there if they're going to appeal those convictions in order to get the car back?
if you assume, most of the cases aren't appealed. If you assume that they will be appealed because of this change, then that could happen.
Okay.
Grab that vote.
Don't go too far, bud.
Grab that vote. Madam Chair, while we're pondering, I'd also like to hear a little bit more about the proceeds of all of this going to the sheriff's office. Somehow that doesn't...
The well, in dealing with the city of Portland, they are basically losing money on the proposition. It is not a profitable operation. Whether they make a little, lose a little, we don't know. But the idea is to deal with the vehicle, not generate a whole bunch of money, and it probably will not generate a bunch. One of the problems with the way it's handled in Portland, about half, and I don't know the exact number, but about half of the vehicles are financed. So those are taken out of the process. Of the remaining, they've got a lot of vehicles that are junkers. They end up subsidizing disposing of those through selling other vehicles. This would have a slightly better potential.
You can find it, who obtains any dog or cat from a person who is from other than the person who raised the animal. And I was wondering if that ought not read obtains a companion animal or offspring of a companion animal to cover the puppy situation.
We used dog or cat in reaction to requests from a variety of interests, including animal research facilities, to limit the bill to dogs or cats generally. But companion animal, as you note, is defined in here also. And I'm just trying to think if it's possible to use that phrase, which would be more cautious.
Companion animal is limited to a dog or a cat.
Right. And it's possessed, da-da-da-da-da-da.
So if we said obtains a companion animal or the offspring of a companion animal, the person who has not raised such companion animal.
If I can pause for a moment, I think that we could restrict it that without doing any damage. I'd like to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Okay,
I think
might
we'd be all right to do that.
That makes me more comfortable. Thanks.
In fact, we originally had done that, but someone decided that all the companion animal references should be changed back to dog or cat, and I think what happened is that got changed back to dog or cat, and
nobody crossed. Would you like to move that, Senator Schumacher?
Yeah, I will move that, the reference to dog or cat, where it appears on line 25 of page 2, and it appears twice, read companion animal or offspring of a companion animal.
Did you get that, Ingrid?
Yes, thank you.
Is there any objection?
I don't think we need to do line 23. I defer to
Well, one at a time.
I would agree with you on this.
Yes. Is there any objection to Senator Schumacher's motion? Not. So ordered. Senator Bond, did you have some questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. First, under the bill, would it be illegal for an animal dealer to obtain a dog or a cat from a retail sales?
Yes, and that was brought up specifically with the retail people. The retail people said they don't want to sell their animals to animal dealers. And we discussed that with them, and they said they don't want to be in the business because, interestingly enough, they're concerned about getting a reputation with people who buy pets of having those people suddenly say, well, you're just passing on some of your animals to animal research facilities. They don't want to be in that business.
Okay. In section 2, sub 2, those that aren't animal dealers, where does someone who raises a sheepdog for farming purposes fall in?
A person,
if they raise them to sell to farmers.
If you're selling your companion animal or offspring of the companion animal.
No, not companion. They're raising them for livestock handling purposes for commercial farming enterprise.
Can I have a little help here?
Absolutely.
Rebecca Anderson, for the record. Chairman Hill, Senator Bunn, if you look under G, any person who breeds or possesses dogs or cats for competition, exhibition, legal sporting events, search and rescue activity, or police activity is covered by agriculture.
Search and rescue activity is covered?
No, I mean, I believe that that it was intended to be under that section.
It is intended to be under there, but if you thought that the phrase agricultural would help.
No, I just don't understand which one of those, competition, sporting, search and rescue, police, which one of those would cover animals raised for livestock handling.
Chairman Hill, Senator Bunn, I also would like to point out the definition of companion animal, which precedes, which says that the dog or cat, this is paragraph 4, line 12, companionship, security, hunting, herding, providing assistance in relation to physical disability.
If you sell a companion animal of your own or its offspring, you're covered by that, so you're not an animal dealer.
Okay, thank you.
Just stay here. Stay here.
Any other questions? Well, Madam Chair, I think we move that, as I get A-15,
A-5
amendments previously. Well. Those have been moved, I believe. And Madam Chair, I guess then Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2660 as amended put forth a due pass recommendation.
Okay, any further comments, discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Bunn. Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Okay, thank you for coming.
Good work.
Okay. Let's go back to our 2681.
We're about done here.
Yep. Well, before we do that, let's take up House Bill 2137. That's the bill that Brenneman's been waiting for.
Is it a big problem on the coast?
Right. Yeah, it's just a letter chastising us for not doing real work and only working on this bill. So I figure we'll get rid of it quickly. This is Ingrid. This is a bill that makes it a felony.
Death penalty.
Or
boom.
Forging lottery tickets, since they are basically not of any value. I guess that's what it is, right, Ingrid?
Madam Chair, as I read it, I believe under current law it would be forgery in the second degree to forge a lottery ticket. This would make it forgery in the first degree because it would clearly include this among those government instruments which are the subject of forgery in the first degree.
What's the matter of your case? What's the penalty for forgery in the second degree?
It's a Class A misdemeanor with a maximum 1 year or $2,500 fine.
1 year, $2,500.
What are lottery shares?
The state police.
Come on up. Why don't you come on up, Mr. Johnson? I think who's working on this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Captain Bill Johnson of the Lottery Security Section of the Oregon State Police. Madam Chair, who was it that had the question on the shares?
I
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman shares will be referred to something similar to a break open. The prize or the ticket is part of a smaller part. As an example, with break open tickets, there are approximately 1,600 tickets to a game, and one of those tickets or shares will be part of that 1,600. A lottery ticket would be, such as a scratch ticket, that's one part of anywhere from 2 to 5 million tickets that is running the game.
The people who do this don't do a single piece at a time, then. Okay.
Well, do they only print winning numbers?
Okay.
Well, I mean, there have been three cases of this last year.
Three?
That's what it says in here.
Okay. But have any other, I don't have any particular, whatever you, what's the pleasure of the committee on this bill?
Why do we feel we need it?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, currently there's an inference and some confusion at district attorney's offices and even with police offices. The inference being currently now on the forgery first degree indicates forgery in the first degree that forgery is an instrument issued by a government or a governmental agency, which lottery tickets or shares currently are. And in some counties, I know in Lane County last year, I believe they indicted and convicted an individual who was forging a number of tickets. And they used the inference that it was an instrument issued by a valuable instrument issued by a governmental agency. And the years 89 and 90, we received some calls from the Clatsop County District Attorney's Office and I believe from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. And there is some there may be some confusion as to whether that is a valuable governmental, an instrument issued by a governmental agency. A ticket could be anywhere from a dollar ticket to, we had one that was $16 million. It was an online ticket.
Well, how would you react to making it clear that it's a Class A misdemeanor rather than leaving it unclear?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, once, as an example, if the ticket happened to be range anywhere from $1 on the scratch game to worth millions of dollars with an online game, such as Megabucks or Lotto America, and forging a ticket value such as $1 million or $5 million or even $100,000 that they've had in instant games, we think is a lot more serious, is a serious offense. Plus, it is, we would think, an instrument issued by a governmental agency, namely the state of Oregon.
If you forge a winning ticket, knowing that it's a winning number, that would be theft by deception. I'm getting a little bit of waters I'm not familiar with, but wouldn't that be theft by deception at least? And the degree of the crime would depend upon the degree of the theft?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, usually all the cases we've run into with altered tickets are what we refer to as cut and paste. They'll take a non-winning ticket and they'll cut out as an example, if it has two $50 symbols on it or two $25 symbols, they'll take a $25 symbol from another ticket, try to insert that in that ticket and present that to a retailer. That's where most of the I would say most of the occurrences are taking place. The retailers are getting cheated by a small number of players.
But that's penny ante stuff. I mean, that's not your $1 million, $100,000 payoff, is
that,
it?
That is correct, sir.
Smaller.
Yes.
So it sort of sounds more like, for the great bulk of cases, this is more of a misdemeanor level. I mean, if you went in and just stole that amount of money out of the till, you'd be down in the Class A misdemeanor, would you, or something of that sort?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, that is correct. There is a different validation process for a high-tier winner, which is $50 and over, and a low tier, which is less than $50 as an example in the scratch tickets. So that would be correct, yes. And most of the majority of cases are on the scratch tickets, and they're being done at the retail locations. $2, $5, $10 tickets, $20 tickets. And the high tier tickets, as an example, even a scratch ticket that's $100, there is another process where another number is checked, and that's run through the lottery's validation file, and that confirms whether that is a winning ticket or not. So that would be correct, sir.
So you can get at the big ones another way, and you have a crime that fits them, theft by deception, I guess.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
You got a recommendation, or do you want to just table the bill?
Well, I think we ought to clarify it, because it's now unclear, apparently, and I think I would clarify it toward being a Class A misdemeanor, which seems to better fit the level of the crime. So I guess I would move the appropriate amendment to accomplish that. I know it has to be rewritten, because you'd have to get the misdemeanor language and fit it into there.
Okay, Senator Bond?
I came in the middle of the discussion, so I didn't hear it. The confusion is a confusion over an A misdemeanor versus a C felony.
Yeah, the confusion, if I understand it correctly, the present language of a C felony, forgery one, I guess it is this part of an issue of money, securities, postage, or revenue, stamps, or other valuable instruments issued by a government. And there's been some DAs have regarded lottery tickets as a valuable instrument issued by a government and prosecuted them as C felonies, as opposed to a misdemeanor. I don't know what the misdemeanor language is, but obviously it doesn't clearly exclude this.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, basically it says forgery in the second degree, a person commits the offense if with the intent to injure or defraud the person falsely makes, completes, or alters a written instrument.
Okay, are there questions? Senator, further comments, Senator Bond?
Just a comment. If we're really dealing with those under $50, I think it's inappropriate to set it as a felony.
Okay. Then, are there objections to Senator Shoemaker's amendments to House Bill 2137? We'll adopt them in conceptual form and get it drafted up. It's rather a straightforward motion of council. Duty, I mean, chore right here, so.
I'm willing to move the bill as amended.
Okay, there were no objections to Senator Shoemaker's amendment. Senator Shoemaker moves House Bill 2137 to the floor with the due pass as we have amended it. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Bunn?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill?
Aye.
Chair Cohen?
Aye. Motion. Thank you. Okay, let's move back to House Bill 2681. Yeah.
Madam Chair, if I may, Russ Shepherd reminded me that rebuttable presumptions don't work in criminal law. It's considered a shifting of the burden of proof, and they are unconstitutional.
So,
what
happened to Mr. Armstrong? You can take that message back and say, deliberate offering of unconstitutional language is a violation of what ought to be a pro bono ACLU law, right?
Madam Chair, for the record, Dave Fedanke, he does not practice criminal law. I think if we would ask that you consider making that language an affirmative defense rather than rebuttable presumption.
Quick thinking. That work? It does, doesn't it?
So let's see, it would be...
Well, before you start drafting around it, we need to see where we're going with this whole thing.
Just in response to Senator Shoemaker's question, I think it could be phrased that way in some fashion to make it an affirmative.
We had a bill the other day that had an affirmative defense in a criminal matter, did we not?
Well, Madam Chair, just to kind of get this moving, I would move that ACLU amendment with a conceptual language and the further amendment, which I think they read into the record on
page 1, line 10, for the purpose of establishing a mental, culpable mental state.
Both with affirmative defense instead of rebuttable presumption?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion?
Senator Bunn, Senator Springer, could you repeat your motion, Senator Bunn?
Yes, I move the ACLU amendments, including some additional language on page 1, line 10, and further conceptually that we rewrite the language for state's rebuttable presumption and rewrite that to establish an affirmative defense.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bunn.
Senator Springer, where does an affirmative defense fit with rebuttable presumption?
We heard, I think, while you were outside briefly, that rebuttable presumption is not permitted under criminal law, but an affirmative defense is the way to deal more appropriately. And the counsel's advised that the language can be written to incorporate that in lieu of rebuttable presumption. Still meet the purpose of an ACLU amendment.
So if someone possesses the material and says it was not with the intent for arousal, was that part of their amendment?
No.
Okay, then if you can demonstrate adequately to the jury that it was not for the purposes of arousal, it is your burden as an affirmative defense to do so.
Okay, further comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hamby?
Clarification only, perhaps, of Senator Springer or ACLU, because I was in and out of the room. I note the proposed amendment to delete lines 33 to 38, section 7, transport.
Violation of the laws of the United States would include Oregon's laws.
Yeah. Did Senator Springer mean to do that? Delete Section 7.
Which basically leaves current language in the law.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it deals with pornographic material rather than child pornography.
Right.
I guess, well, I don't know. Seems like it ought to be child pornography anyway there. It's child pornography in line 34, current law.
Right.
It really looks to me like it's clean up anyway.
Madam Chair, could we hear from the sponsor of the bill before we take a vote?
Yeah. Please. Senator Mannix. Representative Mannix.
Thank you, Representative Kevin Mannix, District 32, Salem. I haven't seen the ACLU amendments, but I've just heard of them. I am assuming that what they're trying to do is for Section 2 establish an affirmative defense that you did not possess this material for arousal. Is that my correct understanding on that part?
Well, that's just kind of a last-minute piece added. The written parts are quite different, I guess. And I guess that's the piece that I have reservations about that.
My concern there is like saying that we're going to, if you took the drug laws and said that, you can't possess the drugs, but you can have an affirmative defense that you didn't intend to consume them. The problem we have is the whole intention of this bill in that first section is to make it a per se offense to possess this stuff, to destroy the market for this stuff, and to say that you can suddenly protect yourself by trying to explain it away and saying, well, you didn't really have it for purposes of arousal. Is to get away from the point that we are talking about contraband, evidence of a crime, the way it's defined in the statute. The material itself reflects sexual activity with a child, which is a crime in the state, and reflects someone who continues to be a victim. And so if we allow someone to have the affirmative defense, everyone's going to present that affirmative defense. Well, it was just in my library because I keep a collection of deviant sexual material. I can explain that the affirmative defense concept is used in criminal law, and it does say that the defendant can proceed to present as an affirmative defense something that basically is exculpatory. It gets them off the hook. And that, by the way, came up, Senator Shoemaker, in the peyote bill. In the peyote bill, the format is to say it's illegal to possess peyote, but you may come in as an affirmative defense and establish that you possessed it for purposes of a religious ceremony. Now I'm taking a look at these proposed amendments. It seems to me that the problem with this, the approach of these amendments, is that you're going to get into a collateral legal issue as to whether or not the materials were produced in violation of the laws of this state or the United States, when actually in the offense itself, you ought to be able to take a look. We're only talking visual material. The item speaks for itself. Does it depict the child involved in this? And let me mention to you, am I responding incorrectly to this?
No, I just think you don't need to go on very long.
Yeah. Okay, I have a real problem with that.
Madam Chair, Kevin, when I think it was Warren Darris that was speaking, saying that we don't really want this, we don't want this bill to apply, for example, to somebody who's taking a picture of their kid running naked on the beach, and that was not the intent that happened, but I think he was admitting that it was possible.
Well, there was a problem on page 2, and I think the chair brought this out, and I was trying to signal, and I remember I was in a tight time zone, I finally got permission to speak briefly. I agreed with the chair that on page 2 of the bill, this graphic focus on genitals or anus was not needed. And Mr. Darris did concede that the language or graphic focus on that was being added to this. Lewd exhibition is enough. And a child, a picture of a child lying on a rug or running around, that's not a lewd exhibition. And in terms of it, the current law has a term of art already in there, lewd exhibition, and that would mean a lot more than just showing a little child running around naked. Graphic focus on, though, creates a question, you know, you dare not use your telephoto lens or what? And that's a part of the bill that is not really necessary and could be stripped away.
Madam Chair, well, we're going to take a vote on it. I guess I would oppose these amendments, especially in light of the point of this, is to get into arguing. I think the issue is whether we want to have, from what I understand, the purpose of it is clear as to all the evidence as to why this type of literature is out there. And to get into discussions, even one lens of an affirmative defense, that it's for some other purpose other than sexual arousal is not an issue that I think it would really detract from what's trying to be achieved by the legislation. So I'm going to oppose the ACLU amendments.
Perhaps, however, Jim, with the exception of the deletion of or graphic focus.
Those are other amendments that we're going to add.
Yes.
We can take them on their own.
Well, we can deal with that.
Okay. We're not finishing the amendments yet.
Ohioans understand it.
Okay. Senator Stringer moved the ACLU amendments. Further discussion. Call roll, please.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Bunn?
No.
Senator Hamby?
No.
Senator Shoemaker?
No.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill?
No.
Chair Cohen?
No. Okay. That failed. Okay. The chair would move on line 16 that we remove graphic focus on. Is there objection to amending the bill in that matter? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, now, I think the discussion still is on Section 8. And that's a piece that I'd like the committee to figure out. Um, we're saying it's a Class C felony to observe explicit conduct by a child . It reads as the bill comes to us. It is unlawful for any person to observe sexually explicit conduct, which is defined in sub 2 on that, up on that page, or to obtain or view a photograph, motion picture, videotape, or other visual recording of sexually explicit conduct involving a child.
Is there a problem there?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bunn.
If a police officer observes the conduct, they would be violating the law.
Yeah. Well, that's really basically literally what you have there. And I guess that's where I, you know, we had some discussion during with Warrenders about that. We had the question of adding knowingly in there. We had some other approaches on how to handle this section. I think it is a section that we need to further figure out where we want to be as a committee with, at a minimum for my purposes.
I think we ought to just go back to the present language of 163.680 and not amend it. Then you've got pay or give anything of value, and that ought to be enough. That's what you're doing. You're guilty of a Class C felony, and if, other than that, you aren't.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator. Well, Senator Bunn wants to ask another question first.
No, I'm just supporting the leading Section 8.
Okay, Representative Maddox.
I was present when there was some discussion of this, and I concurred and I agree with the Chair's concern and the other Senator's concern because. If we go with the current law, I would suggest, however, that you want to modify the current law just a little bit to make it consistent with the new language. If you had this read, it is unlawful for any person to pay or give anything of value, put that language back in, to observe sexually explicit conduct by a child. You don't have to say known by the person there because you've already got it covered. And then to say or to pay or give anything of value to obtain or view a photograph, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have pretty much gotten it in tune with the language of the bill, but you've required that there be someone pay or give anything of value to observe or to obtain or to view, and it gets you back to the same concept as the current law.
Okay, Senator Bronson.
Is there a statute somewhere else that deals with observing sexually explicit conduct for free? I mean, good heavens, if it's going to make it a felony to look at a picture, I certainly think it should be every bit that kind of penalty to observe it.
Madam Chair, Senator Bruckman, I don't believe so.
Well, then I don't want to tinker with that.